Today we want to concern ourselves primarily with mammals in particular and animals in general. The evolutionist claims that this world is a product of evolution. And the Bible claims that this world was created by God. Two great and bold antithetical statements, at least one of which must be wrong. And the attempt at compromise through the proposal of theistic evolution is a vain endeavor to accommodate the skeptic at the expense of a literal interpretation of the Word of God. Did animals evolve? It's an important question. Because if they did, you and I are wasting our time this morning. We might as well go home, forget church, and throw our Bibles away. For if God didn't create the world, then this book is a lie. Consider with me this morning some of the wonders of creation. There's such a remarkable variety and complexity and ingenuity in the animal kingdom. And unfortunately, we really only have time for a few examples. There are literally thousands that we could look at, all of them unique, all of them perfectly equipped for their environment, all of them bearing testimony to a designer and a creator. Consider the camel, wonderfully suited for the rigors of the desert. Did he evolve into such a creature? And if so, how? Surely a creature not already suited for such a habitat would not willingly stay there and wait to evolve into the animal that it is now. Why did it not leave for greener pastures? And if there was something that kept it from leaving, why only it? How did other creatures get out? Or why did they not adapt in their own way at whatever stage they were in the evolutionary process? Now, the camel was designed for the desert. He has wide hooves that keep him from sinking into the deep sand. Each foot has two long toes with a tough piece of leathery skin like webbing stretched between them. His webbed feet are spongy and they spread out and become wider the more weight is put upon them. Without these specially designed feet, the camel would not be able to make much progress across the desert at all. It would be a slow and tiring trip if he didn't have his specially designed sand shoes. A fully loaded camel may weigh as much as 1,600 pounds or more. Without his webbed feet, he'd sink up to his knees in the sand. Because of his feet and the other features that God has given him, camel can carry a 400-pound load 100 miles across the hot desert sand in one day. The animal is required to kneel while heavy loads are placed upon his back. In some cases, even as much as 800 pounds or more a camel will carry. His knees are furnished with thick callus pads to protect him while he's kneeling and heavy weights are being added to him. These are not developed by pressure or by use. The camel is born with them. Sandstorms are common on the desert. The wind whips up grains of sand with such force that it can completely strip all the paint off a car in a short amount of time, should you happen to park in the middle of the Sahara someday. The camel was given extra long eyelashes to shield his eyes from the blowing sand. They act like a screen. The camel can see out, but the sand can't get in. His ears have long hairs that keep the sand out, but still let the sound in. He has muscles in his nostrils that enable him to partially close them in such a way as to keep out the sand, but still be able to breathe. Bactrian camel has two humps, and the Arabian camel has one hump. Most people think that the camel stores water in his hump. It is a storage tank, but not for water. The camel's hump contains about 100 pounds of fat. It is an emergency food supply. If the camel can't find plants to eat, the fat in his hump supplies him with the energy that he needs. So if a camel doesn't store water in his hump, where does he keep it? A thirsty camel has been known to drink as many as 27 gallons of water in 10 minutes' time. Then he can go 8 days before he has a drink again. The water is not stored in his stomach, only digestive juices are kept there. Actually, there is no storage tank for water in the camel's body. Then where could that 27 gallons go? 10 minutes after his big drink, the water has disappeared. It has traveled to every cell in his body. Water is divided up equally among his body tissues. There are millions of tiny blood vessels called capillaries in the camel's stomach and intestine. When the water reaches those two areas, it passes through tiny openings in the capillaries and enters the bloodstream. This process is called osmosis. The water enters the bloodstream and mixes with the blood. It flows quickly to every part of the camel's body. Bloodstream carries the water to each body cell, and there the water bathes and fills each cell and the spaces between the cell, and all of this happens in less than 10 minutes' time. Scientists tested a 1,000-pound camel who was given no water for 8 days. Each day during the test, the temperature was at least 125 degrees. At the end of 8 days, the camel had lost 227 pounds. Take that, Jenny Craig. Huh? That's a pretty good plan. Lost a quarter of his body weight in 8 days, all in water. And scientists also tested his blood. Now, normally, a camel's blood contains 94% water, just like a human's blood does. By the end of the eight days, the camel had lost 10% of the water in his blood. Still, his blood flowed smoothly. Scientists tell us that if we were to lose 5% of the water in our blood, we would no longer be able to see. If we were to lose 10% of the water in our blood, we would no longer be able to hear, and we would go insane. If we lose 12%, we die. The reason is because the blood thickens like molasses and the heart has to struggle to pump it, and it becomes thicker and cannot enter some of the more minute vessels that it must enter, and in a matter of time, we eventually very quickly die. Camel's blood becomes thick only when it loses 40% of the water through perspiration and dehydration. As it's losing water, as it's using up the water in its body, still it is keeping its blood water level at 94%. It is only when it begins to dehydrate and dry out that the water level ever drops below 94%. Even after a few days in the desert, when the camel has lost a lot of water, still his blood level is at 94%, constantly regulated by his body. Scientists gave their camel water on the 9th day. It had lost 10% of its water level in its blood, gave it water on the 9th day. It drank all 227 pounds it lost in 10 minutes' time. It tested its blood right at 94%. Camel only travels 8 to 10 miles an hour, but it can keep up this pace for 20 hours straight without stopping. Camel has been remarkably designed to do the work God planned it to do. Proverbs 3:19 tells us that the Lord, by wisdom, hath founded the earth. Jeremiah 51:15 says, He hath made the earth by His power. He hath established the world by His wisdom, and hath stretched out the heaven by His understanding. Consider the lowly mole this morning. Not the ones on your arm, but the little creature that looks somewhat like a mouse. Small as he is, he has been perfectly designed to do what he needs to do. He doesn't have toes on his feet, just paws with claws. 5 long, sharp claws on each paw. He can't run very well, but he can sure dig. Every part of the mole's body is designed so he can dig quickly and efficiently. The mole can hear grubs and worms as they crawl and eat their way through the ground. He has a built-in sensor system that is like a seismograph. The mole has a seismograph on his tail and his nose. Tiny hairs on his tail can pick up the vibrations of a grub several feet away. Those vibrations send a signal to his brain, and his brain alerts his body. Back up in your tunnel 3 feet, dig to the left 6 inches, and there's the grub. Mole has a better sense of touch and sensitivity to vibration than any other mammal on earth. It is said that the mole's nose is the most sensitive and accurate vibration detector known to science today. It has thousands of tiny parts, each one attached to his brain that tells him where the grub is that's making the chewing noise. A mole's nose are thousands of tiny bumps called Eimer organs. Each bump has one very sensitive hair in it that picks up the vibrations from the insect moving through the soil several feet away. The hairs vibrate, causing the Eimer organs to send electrical signals to the mole's brain, telling exactly where to tunnel through the earth to get to the insect. The mole eats often, day and night. He works and eats for 4 to 5 hours, and then he rests for 3 to 4 hours. They tell us that over a period of a year, this little half-pound bundle of dark gray velvet can eat 60 pounds of grubs and worms and other insects. He needs to eat to stay alive. He needs to eat often. If his nose was not so sensitive, he would starve to death. Now, if he is the product of evolution, He developed that sensitivity over tens of thousands or perhaps hundreds of thousands of years. How did he survive? When he only had 10 little bumps on his nose that didn't work very well instead of thousands that worked very efficiently. How did he evolve? The theory of evolution contradicts logic. It contradicts the Bible. It contradicts science. And it contradicts common sense. It is based upon untenable assumptions and wild guesses. The Origin of the Species by Charles Darwin, a book that would have to be considered the evolutionist's first Bible, let us assume, or we may well assume, appears over 800 times. Add to that a number of times where the phrases may have been, may be, might have been occur, and you have a book of guesses. They can't be sure of anything, and when they think they're sure of something, they're usually wrong. It's amazing how many people will blindly follow them, because they have degrees from some prestigious quote-unquote university behind their name, and because they've studied for years, it's assumed they know what they're talking about. Some of the men held up to be the most brilliant men of our day, God calls them fools. Romans speaks of those who profess themselves to be fools, or to be wise, but they're fools. And there are men who may be intellectually gifted in one area or another, but that doesn't make them authorities in every area of life. Look at Einstein, brilliant man. Didn't even know how to comb his hair. You ever seen his picture? But there are people, millions of them, who will accept what a Carl Sagan says as gospel truth and reject the word of God, in spite of the fact that there is no evidence, no evidence for the theory of evolution, no evidence whatsoever. If you believe in evolution, you ought to put it to work in your own life. Let your garden evolve. You can even give it a head start. Plant some vegetables or flowers in a plot of ground. Then just sit back and let it evolve. Go back in about 2 or 3 months and see, has your garden evolved or has it devolved? You'll have weeds. Your plants will not be doing real well. Something worse will have happened, not something better. Let anything in your life evolve. Let your car evolve into something better. Just let left to itself and the random forces of nature. Don't even bother to change the oil. Just let it evolve into something. Let your child evolve. The Bible says a child left to himself bringeth his mother to shame. Let your house evolve. Ladies, don't do anything in your home. Forget housework. Let your house evolve into something wonderful. Take your watch. Put it away for a while. See if it won't evolve into a grandfather clock. Nothing in life evolves. And yet we're expected to believe that all of life has evolved. And yet nothing evolves in life. Mutations are almost always negative and rarely self-propagating, and yet we're expected to believe that our entire world has gotten better, more advanced, stronger, more efficient, more intelligent through this very means. The whole theory of evolution stands in contrast to the second law of thermodynamics, and yet the second law of thermodynamics is a scientifically accurate, provable, testable, established fact. No true scientist denies it. A scientist would be a fool to deny the second law of thermodynamics. That all of nature is breaking down and becoming more random. The forces of nature are dissipating and becoming weaker and more random as time goes on. Every scientist believes it. So which are you going to go with? A theory which has no scientific basis whatsoever? Or an undeniable, firmly established scientific fact that flies in the face of evolution? It's not blind faith you exercise when you believe the Bible. It's blind faith you exercise when you believe evolution. But there's nothing, there's no foundation for you to put your trust in. There are many animals that have been given remarkable survival instincts and techniques. And if they had to learn them over periods of hundreds of thousands or millions of years, they could not possibly have survived. Who taught the possum to fake death if not God, his creator? When captured, it can immediately simulate death. Its jaw hangs open, it lays on its back or side, its tongue extended, its eyes dimmed. Even if kicked or beaten, it will not quiver a muscle or flicker an eyelid. When its attacker loses interest and wanders away, the possum scampers to safety. It's a God-given instinct. It's not learned behavior. He has it when he's born. He doesn't have to be taught it. Consider the kangaroo. Full-grown, it is strong and capable. In full flight, it can easily clear 9-foot fences. If cornered, it can rest on its tail alone and strike out with both powerful hind feet at the same time. When standing upright, it is almost as tall as a man. But when it is first born, it is only an inch long, soft, bare, blind, and helpless. semi-transparent like an earthworm. It has been given an instinct upon birth to make its way immediately to its mother's pouch. Crawling on its knees and elbows, it makes its way up one of the mother kangaroo's legs to her abdomen, struggling along until it finds her pouch. Oh, it would not survive long at all if it didn't get into its mother's pouch. Once inside, it attaches itself to the mother and begins to nurse. The circular muscle that surrounds the lips of the baby kangaroo, which contracts in a tight involuntary spasm. The baby kangaroo cannot control it. Keeps the little Joey firmly attached to his mother even when she's hopping around. Now the windpipe in other mammals and in humans terminate at the same level of the esophagus. If it was that way inside the baby kangaroo, it would choke to death. Instead, its windpipe is elongated and shunted forward into the back opening of the nasal chamber. Thus, no milk can go the wrong way, and the air gets right down into the lungs. At what point did that special windpipe evolve? And how did any kangaroo survive before it did? How could it possibly have made it before it developed its special windpipe that it needs to survive? In 1 Kings chapter 4, it's said of Solomon, God gave Solomon wisdom and understanding exceeding much, and largeness of heart even as the sand that is on the seashore. And Solomon's wisdom excelled the wisdom of all the children of the east country and all the wisdom of Egypt. For he was wiser than all men than Ethan the Ezrahite and Heman and Chalcor and Darda the sons of Mahol. His fame was in all nations round about. And he spake 3,000 proverbs, and his songs were 1,005. And he spake of trees from the cedar tree that is in Lebanon, even unto the hyssop that springeth out of the wall. He spake also of beasts and of fowl and of creeping things and of fishes. And there came of all people to hear the wisdom of Solomon from all the kings of the earth, which had heard of his wisdom. It would be interesting to know how much Solomon knew, especially given revelation given to him by God. There are so many things about the animal world we are just now finding out, and many, many things we will never know in this world. And yet there's a remarkable variety, unbelievable uniqueness and creativity in all of God's creation. Each new discovery, every new interesting fact points to a creator and points to a designer, a mastermind behind it all. Still, the evolutionist asks you to believe that it all just fell into place. Consider this morning the beaver. When he fells a tree by the river, he can usually drop it right where he needs to put it. He doesn't have to practice an experiment either. From his first tree to his last one, he's remarkably accurate. The dams they build, many times more than 500 feet long, almost the length of 2 football fields. The stream is rapid and deep. The beavers build their dam with a convexity facing upstream, showing a remarkable innate knowledge of engineering. If the river is wide and turbulent, they will build a series of dams, thus creating less pressure or strain on any given dam. They chop trees into 5 or 6 foot lengths and take smaller branches and sticks along with roots and grasses and moss and mud and clay and construct a perfectly watertight home. Within their dome-shaped house is a central chamber with its floor a little bit above the level of the water and 2 shafts which have their outer openings in the water. It's the only way you can get into their home. One of these shafts is a straight one with a moderate incline, and it is up this shaft that the beavers drag their logs and their bark that they need to maintain their home and for their winter food supply. One of the other shafts is more abrupt in its descent and winding in its course and harder to traverse, and it is their normal entrance and exit. The floor of their lodge is a snug carpet of grass and bark and wood chips so they can be comfortable. The beaver has a heavy body, short, fat legs with webbed hind feet and a flat paddle-shaped tail. He is best suited to life in the water and does not travel near as well on land. They must travel in the water to be safe, especially when he has to carry something like bark or logs. On land, he is very awkward then and very vulnerable to predators. So what do beavers do if they've used up all the good trees that grow along the banks of the river? They build canals. They may make a shortcut between one bend of a winding stream and another, or they may cut right through an island. They may completely change the course of a river. Some of their canals are several hundred feet in length, remarkably designed. Engineers who build dams say the beaver's dam is built the best way known to man. They're built the same way that engineers would build them if those were all the supplies that they could use. But engineers have to be taught how to build dams. They have to go to school. They have to learn and study. Who taught the beaver? His mother? No. A beaver is born knowing how to build a dam and how to build a canal. They've done experiments, and if you take a beaver as soon as it's born and you raise him in a laboratory until he's grown with no other beavers around, and then turn him loose when he's grown, turn him loose by a stream, he'll build a perfect dam with his first attempt. If that innate knowledge that he has at birth is part of the evolutionary process as well? Then how come we don't have that ability? Since we're a higher, more advanced life form, supposedly. How come we don't have that ability? That would be valuable. Your dad is an architect, you should be born knowing how to be an architect. Even if then raised by adopted parents in a different environment. If your parents are mathematical geniuses, then you should be one as well, without ever having to study, with no education or training. You should just be one. Beaver has a gland on his stomach that produces oil. He takes that oil and rubs it in his hair and gets his hair all oily. Why? It waterproofs him. It insulates him from the cold. It reduces friction, making him quicker and more maneuverable in the water. How does he know to do that? Who taught him? He was born knowing how. The beaver evolved. The millions of years it must have taken him to develop to where he could gnaw down a tree. That's pretty impressive. Have you ever tried to chew a tree down? How long did that take him to develop, to be able to gnaw down a tree and know how to build a dam? How long did that take him? How did he possibly escape his predators and even survive until he developed that ability? Consider the bat. It's a remarkable radar system. If deprived of his eyesight, and bats have very weak eyes, but if deprived completely of his eyesight, he can still fly through and over and under and around all kinds of obstacles without ever crashing, even in pitch black. There's several hundred different species of bats alone. Tells there's a cave in Texas from which every night a rapidly moving swarm of bats emerges, a literal cloud of bats, and it takes over 2 hours for them all to get out of the cave. Some of you ladies that like bats might want to consider going spelunking there. And an incredible radar system. How did that evolve? How did they evolve to where they could have a incredibly designed and advanced radar system? The evolutionist doesn't know. Because it didn't evolve. God made the bat and has equipped him to be able to fly in dark caves and given him everything he needs to survive. God equipped every creature with exactly what it needed. He even designed a little woodchuck and made him where he would hibernate when food would be scarce. He would hibernate, and during that time, he must be able to conserve fat and food and energy. So his whole body system slows way down. Normally, he breathes 38 to 40 times a minute, the woodchuck does. 38 to 40 times a minute, and even faster when he gets excited or he's running or straining in any way. 38 to 40 times or more a minute. When he's hibernating, he breathes 10 or 12 times an hour. For every 200 breaths he took before while he is hibernating, he takes only one. Try that sometime. To conserve energy, just cut your breathing down to 1/200th of what you normally do. How did that evolve? How could a woodchuck have possibly developed that? We don't have time this morning to consider the elephant, the wolverine, the skunk, the giraffe, the lion, the hippopotamus, the porcupine. How did the porcupine evolve? How did he develop those quills that he could throw into his predators? How could he have evolved that? On and on and on. Literally thousands of animals we could look at. Oh, there's no doubt evolution never happened. It is a lie. It is a lie made up by man who did not want there to be a God. A lie from the pits of hell. John 8:44, Jesus talking to the Jews one day said, "You're of your father the devil, and the lusts of your father you will do." He was a murderer from the beginning and abode not in the truth, because there is no truth in him. When he speaketh a lie, he speaketh of his own, for he is a liar and the father of it. God created this world. Created you. Just like he knew how to design each creature perfectly, he knew how to make you. A giraffe neck on an elephant wouldn't have worked. The head weighed so much the neck couldn't support it. The radar capabilities of a bat weren't needed on the rhinoceros. God knew how to design each animal. He had a specific purpose. And he knew how to design you, and he has a specific purpose for you as well. And if you're empty this morning, and if your life seems without purpose, there's a reason. A camel wouldn't do well in the swamps of Louisiana. He wasn't designed for that. That's not where he's supposed to be. That's not what he's supposed to be doing. A giraffe wouldn't do well up in a tree. That's not how God designed it. And perhaps this morning you're empty, and your life has no direction and no purpose and no meaning, and there's a hole in your heart today because you've never even realized the purpose for which you were created.